Yeah, we'll talk about it, you know, because one of the, I've had one person cancel from their intensive work flying in to work with me. I expect there'll probably be more, but I had a very intense virus in December, and I was very suspicious because nobody said anything about a really bad flu virus going around. It went straight to my lungs. It's subsided, but I still have lung pain 3 months after it passed. And my ear is still leftly partially blocked on the left side, both ears filled up with fluids. And I've never seen a virus like this, never in my life. And one somebody Mirabelle coughed on me and was obviously contagious at the time. And you know, so I wouldn't be surprised to find that I already had it. But you know, I could work right through it, took Alka-Seltzer cold and flu. It did not, however, go into a fever like it does for a lot of people. And it didn't move into nausea or stomach illness like a lot of people. I had a flu virus. I had the flu vaccination this year. I don't know if that helped them. But whatever it was the most vicious virus I've ever had in the last 20 years. And I'm not sure I've ever had a virus affect me that much. But I'm past it. So I just moved right through it and kept going. But I still have symptoms carry over from it. But I wouldn't be surprised to find that this virus has been out there longer than they've told us. And they just finally admitted that this thing was out there. And that's why, because it got so obvious people are dropping that, you know. But there was something out there much sooner than that. And I think I've already passed through it in December. And it went on. And it still has symptoms. I even had a lung. I've never had a lung x-ray to make sure I was clear and didn't have walking pneumonia. And I had the X-ray, and I'm clear. Apparently, whatever it was has now moved out. But I did end up taking antibiotics that I had on hand, which they would do for pneumonia or other kinds of things if it went bacterial. So I did that. But people are kind of freaking out. But I'm wondering if there's reason to freak out because it sounds like it's worse than they led us to believe, which is rare. Usually they catastrophize it and say that it's worse than what it's going to be, so that they scare you enough. And now people are already so scared. I don't know what's going to happen with all that. Remind people, however, that the number one fastest daily way to boost your immune system, apart from nutrition, is to reframe your memories. Every memory you reframe drops your cortisol levels and boosts your T cell count, see, T cell production. So,
Could you put that in a quote that I could use?
actually, we're going to send it as an email to everybody.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah.
So, you know, you can stay
It
home and
certainly
do phone sessions and reframe your memories. And every time you do that, you release your triggers, your anxiety triggers, fear triggers. Also, work with people. We're going to talk today about disease because in 1 week, about 3 weeks ago, I had three people come in with level three and level four diagnoses for cancer. And so I'm working with suddenly cancer patients are coming out of the woodwork. So I'm like, okay, time to move into disease discussions about how we treat diseases with HMR. And so we'll be talking about that a little bit more today. It's like you would expect, though. It's not each person's compromise of their immune system is quite unique and personal to their history. And so what's going to end up happening is that you're going to end up working on memories that you would not think would be directly related to illness or virus, but it has to do with about are they cared for? Are they being cared for properly? Does illness mean love for some people? And so they were vulnerable as children. Is the subconscious susceptible to illness? Are they vulnerable? You know, getting sick is how they got love from alcoholic mommy. You got to look at all those kinds of things and see what's going on. Ramon, it looks like you're on the space station right now. So I'm wondering how you got there. I'm a little curious as to why you look like you're. Oh, her mic is turned off. Can you turn on her mic, Jeanette? Ramona's mic is off. Is that you or is that her? Ramona, your mic is off if you can hear me.
Yes, I hear you.
Oh,
Sorry.
now we hear you. Okay, there you go. Yeah, you look like you're floating on the space station right now. How's that
I
possible?
don't know. I Zoom get me to choose a background, so I did.
Oh, nice. That's cool. So
Oh,
you look like you've left the planet. That would be wise at this time. At least you have no flu.
I you yes.
No flu if you're floating out in space, I think, probably.
Yes. Oh, sorry. I missed the last two supervisions.
What happened? Was your cat ill or what happened there? I mean, you know.
I completely forgot.
Oh, no, you spaced out. Okay, well, you're back.
I completely forgot. Came home from my practice and then I saw the email the second day. And now I learned to put it visually on my calendar. So
what are they doing in Canada with all this virus phobia stuff going on right now? Are they doing anything particular?
Canadians are very passive. Mm-hmm. So, nothing really major. I work with a bunch of nurses and they think this is a joke. Oh. And at the same time, I'm saying, I don't think so, because my friend in Berlin is freaking out. Mm-hmm. There is no food in Berlin. He was driving 3 hours to find yeast and flour.
Yeah.
My cousin in Italy she sent me terrible pictures. So this is not a joke. So, but I guess until it hits home, nothing will happen. No healthcare system is prepared for this. Mm-hmm. So, it's not really the severity as the spreading, the numbers that it reaches mm-hmm. in a short time. The pictures I've seen from Italy are not only the old people, as they tend to say in the news. Mm-hmm. Their very young bodies are laying flat on their tummies because they cannot breathe. Oh. So guys, pray. This is not pretty. I mean, whatever. I don't want to scare anybody, but I'd rather be scared and aware than ignorant. That's and not true. Do anything about it, right? Uh-huh. It's everyone's outlook. Let's hope something will... somebody will find something for it soon. So,
one of the things that a lot of people here have been talking about is, oh, I don't want to be in fear, so I'm just going to pretend it's not there and I won't get sick. It's kind of a thinking that if I think about it, then I'll get sick. And if I don't think about it, then I won't get sick. And it's proving not to be so. But one of the things that I've said to people is just instead of being afraid, just be aware. And so if you use aware.
Exactly. I mean, you don't need to be in fear, but be aware, you know, wash your hands, avoid crowds. Which I don't. I mean, I'm a healthcare right. practitioner, so everybody comes. Today was funny. I just had a tickled throat, and I did a few times, and everybody split. So from the waiting room, I'm like, people, I just have a dry throat.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's not funny. It's not.
No.
It's actually very sad. I've never seen Rome so empty in my life. Public transportations are empty. It looks like a ghost town. Anyway, it is what it is. I personally don't deal with the flu very well. I'm allergic to the vaccine. No. So I don't know what, more than washing hands, we don't know what to do really.
Mm-hmm. You can boost your immune system.
Yeah,
like you
that
said,
I do.
By reframing memories, but also by meditation, as well as, again, you know, one of the things people are afraid of is when they feel like they're not in control. And mm-hmm. If you give them some measures that makes them feel a little more in control, it calms them down and it doesn't hurt anyone. I wore a mask today because I'm getting over a cold and I had no temperature. I know it's not Corona, but I wore a mask today and the waters parted at the at the King Soopers today. It was like, I'd see people look at me and go, I think I'll go down the other aisle. But it was me protecting other people from getting even my cold. I don't want to impose that on anyone. But the other thing that wearing a mask, and I know we're told not to wear masks, I'm all about making your own mask at home. And So it makes you aware when you touch your face. And if for nothing else, that's a nice little helpful reminder. Oh, I'm touching my face. I shouldn't be touching my face.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I have no idea how is US, Brent. So I barely have any time to watch any news.
Well, I don't watch news anyway very much myself, so I'm not quite sure. But I do have a couple of cases that we'll start with today about illnesses. And I was telling folks that I had may disappear for a moment here. No, you can still see me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm looking actually at, I have to go to a note that I made in my phone here. There are a couple of clients that I treated. In 1 week's time, I had three people come in with illnesses, with severe diagnoses with cancers. And so our theme was going to be treating and working with HMR with disease, actually with cancer. So that might be appropriate given. But the biggest reminder is that anytime you reframe your memories and release your triggers, you know, med school 101, general adaptation syndrome, when adrenaline, look up Hans Selye, anybody that has any questions. It is true that when you're stressed and anxious, that when you're stressed and anxious, your T cells go down and your adrenaline, your cortisol levels go up. And whenever cortisol rises, T cell and immunity go down. So I'm going to look up my two clients here and go over the session notes with you a little bit about how I reframed this with them and how they presented. I don't think there's going to be a standard presentation for cancer patients. The one that I worked with is a pretty well-known politician and has recently been diagnosed, and the public is not really aware of his diagnosis at this point, so we will not talk much about that. But he is working on illness, and let's see what we actually did in the session. So I'm going to go over it in more detail with you. So, obviously, you know, people expect that there's going to be a particular kind of a way of treating an illness or a cancer or something like that. But the truth of the matter is every person tracks in according to their own personal compromise of their immune system. If there's anything that HMR has taught us, there's not a standard 911 trauma. There's not exactly a standard cancer profile that you're going to see. But the way a person navigates or the body moves into cell mutation that generates illness is always very interesting. And it may not start with a huge thing like we're thinking about. But in this case, let me go back, hold on here. You all can still hear me, yes? You still hear me?
Yes.
For some reason. Okay, there it is. Weird. All right. The whole thing vanished for a second there. So I was trying to figure out where you all went. All right. So when I worked with him, we really focused on five primary memories. The stress, the worry, the anxiety, the upset that he had from the diagnosis. Preceding his illness was his wife's illness. And that, taking care of her for years on end, he suspected wore him down. And so one of the first thing we did was pile up and release all the accumulated tension, stress, and worry. So if you can see an obvious cause that would have compromised the individual's immune system, look for that, work with that, level one, level two, however it maps out for him. It's like, no, there's no specific moment per se, but it was more about the overall impact of his wife's illness on his health. It created worry, created stress, created upset to his system. And so what we did is a level two, he piled it up. I said, all the trauma, all the accumulated stress from your wife's illness, let's pile that up. He shoved that off a cliff. So then we proceeded to a memory at age 8, where the individual was in the backyard swinging, and Mom was hanging clothes, and as a little boy, he just ran up and hit his mother with a badminton racket. He was playing. And he was like, oh, I'm just going to go up and whatever. He just had some crazy idea around, hey, hit his mother with a badminton racket. But it created confusion, sadness, and guilt about having hurt somebody else. Now, one thing I will tell you that it's not uncommon when you're working with cancers or illnesses to find that there's some kind of a message of shame or guilt that anchors in the pathology. Like, I deserve to be punished, or I deserve to not be healed, or I deserve to have some kind of... So, if it makes you feel guilty, you did something bad, why should they be kind to me? Why should I receive help? Why should I receive support? So, for some reason, the bad man now, what's the connection? He just remembered that because he didn't know why he did it, why it happened. Exactly. So, he just ran up and maybe was being, you know, mischievous and got a little too aggressive, didn't realize it. That hit his mother with the badminton racket. It wasn't really hard. I mean, obviously it upset her and it made him feel guilty and confused about it. And he got punished for it, of course. His next memory jumped to present age and receiving the diagnosis itself. So that was kind of curious. He went from a badminton racket to the cancer diagnosis, stage 4, and pretty heavy, metastasized to different parts of his body. And so he reframed that, picturing a normal scan, no cancer report, not having cancer itself, and proceeded to reframe that memory of the diagnosis itself. Often how the diagnosis, and the doctor was very insensitive, kind of callous when he gave the information, and that was traumatic for him, kind of pulled him aside. I don't know if he didn't say it wasn't a family relative who wanted to give him the information personally, but... either way, I don't know if that helps or hurts when it gets down to it. How we receive the information can be traumatic. And then he pictured the cancer itself. So one thing we always do is, if you have seen pictures of it, or have you seen the illness itself, what is the cancer, what does the illness look like? So he had seen pictures, and he said, I said, what do you image it as? You may remember in Deepak Chopra's book, Quantum Healing, he talked about a man who was diagnosed with lung cancer, and he told the gentleman, Deepak was talking to him, Simonton, the cancer specialist, suggested that he visualize little white Pac-Man eating the cancer, pictured it as a black rock, and picture the cancer, picture the Pac-Man consuming the cancer. But in the end, instead of telling him to do that, he said, but use whatever imagery you want to use, which was the right thing to say. And so when he said, use your own imagery, he said, well, he said, my favorite nature weather is snow falling. And so he went back to picturing the black rock and a horrible scene, and then picture snowflakes falling. And he did that for 2 weeks. He did it for several months. But in 2 weeks, the tumor was shrinking. And in 2 months, the tumor was gone. And so what I was amazed at is he was giving us description of using a color and your own brainwave frequencies. And he didn't know what he was doing with that. He just thought he was using a nice positive imagery to make the cancer go away. But he took the black rock and changed it to white, the opposite color. So... we've had somebody, I told you about the cancer patient that I had that heard my lecture at Miraval, went back, put her hand over the tumor site for 2 weeks before the scheduled lumpectomy, ran colors through the breast area. And when they went to do the lumpectomy, it was not there. 2 weeks later, when they went, the doctor was shocked, went back, did more scans, did a PET scan. There was nothing there to operate on. And so in the end, she emailed the general manager and myself, thank you so much, because I believe I healed it myself using my own brainwave frequencies. Now, again, that is if the cancer is memory-based. There can be other sources. You could be exposed to desert storm. There could be some weird biochemical agent. There might be a viral source. Although HMR works pretty well with most viral things, that's how I developed this work, working with viruses and so on, and being able to heal planters warts and fever blisters and things like that. That's how I discovered the power of energy work, to be able to heal viral-related illness kind of a thing. So HMR may have another potential when it comes to this virus phenomenon. That's how I got interested in energy and healing touch and energy healing, as I can touch. I still, to this day, can touch most fever, blisters, warts, viruses. I can usually cause shingles to go away faster, things of that sort. So the energy from HMR, it may be that the alpha theta frequency and working with your memories, we have not done a broad enough study along those lines to see how that would, in fact, impact the overall functioning of the immune system and viruses. But if we're going to be working more long distance with people, I get calls all the time. Up to now, my principle has been I want to work with you face-to-face, then work with you long distance. But given people's fears and they can't necessarily always get on planes or they're scared to death, odds are likely we're going to have to do the long distance thing instead. So that's an option now. I can do it. I just like the energy part, the actual contact in person, face-to-face. So as we move into this era, so let me see. And so he reframed his cancer diagnosis and was able to move colors through his body on that. So we'll go back to that scene. And brilliant white light to dry out the lesion areas, to blow them, turn to dust and blow them away. And he did that. And then his last memory, let me see what the last reframe was on this. Went to a memory at age 18, going to high school, and it was about social connections to people. And it was in his foot. He had an injury, actually, some kind of an anomaly, an illness along his foot that was a pain. And he reframed that with colors and pictured getting more support and guidance to navigate social relationships through transitions. And that's most of what his body just presented us with. He didn't show any particular cause other than the memories that we're talking about. So he'd been quite fortunate in his life as far as this goes before the cancer showed up. So I can't tell you exactly, but we'll just have to work with this and have him, I encourage him to use daily imagery, to use colors, like I said, to visualize the cancer in whatever form it presents itself and to be able to work with that. Continuously. The other client, let me switch to see what the other client did. She was diagnosed with breast cancer and is scheduled for mastectomies and all of the above, all kinds of therapies and so on. But they were optimistic that they caught it early enough. So let me call her record up. I forgot to make note of the third cancer client. I got tied up. I got very busy at Miraval. And then they're still coming to Miraval. People have not slowed down very much coming out to do their own personal healing work. So but this person did two sessions. Let me see if this is the same year. She did two back-to-back sessions. So pretty close together, 2 days of each other. And so she was diagnosed with the breast cancer. And the first memory she worked with was in the right breast, under the surface, burning sensation, fear, overwhelm, kind of terrified about the whole thing. So she pictured no burning sensation and having healthy breasts, healthy right breast. The color was seafoam green. But that memory was interrupted by two other memories as she was working on it. One of them was as she was starting to talk about having the breast cancer, she went into memories of having no emotional support. She married a narcissist, basically, an unavailable individual, having inadequate support during the marriage. Now, with breast cancer, the most common profile, I asked the psychiatrist, what is the most... I said, did you find anything for doing your residency on women with breast cancer? She said, oh, yes. We found that majority of women that most common profile was women who were in abusive marriages, often alcoholic. The individual was not, they were not supported financially. They were afraid to leave, were emotionally dependent, afraid to kind of be on their own, and were angry and frustrated with the whole thing, but could not express those emotions openly. And so they were obviously turning that on themselves. They did a number of studies in Australia with women with breast cancer, with with alcoholics, alcoholic marriages, and the results are pretty interesting about the high elevation of breast cancer in that population. And so it's not abstract, it's not theoretical. They've done the studies. And you all have probably heard the same thing. If I hadn't left that man when I did, I hadn't left the marriage, I know I would have died of cancer. We hear this from a lot of our clients. They knew they were in a damaging, abusive, emotionally oppressive. Alcoholics are often quite narcissistic anyway, but they can also have a narcissistic personality disorder. And I can tell you this, we're going to see it now, because if you know who, the president doesn't show up for this health crisis, that's a classic narcissistic response. And the thing is, what I always tell my clients in their presentations with the narcissist, they are most dangerous when you're sick, when you're ill. They do not show up for you when you're at a critical moment. I gave that in my lecture 2 weeks ago, and a woman came up to me after and said, I've already signed up for a session with you. She says, but when she did the session, she said, when I had my second child, my husband stayed for about half of the birth, and he left. For the third child, he ordered a limousine, had me taken to the hospital for a C-section, and he never showed up for the third child. And I'm like, okay, that is the classic narcissist. I said, you just, you know, personified. Because a narcissist, when you get ill or you're sick, you're like, well, you know, I can put you in a taxi and send you to the ER, you'll be fine. Do not expect a true narcissist to respond appropriately, except that I just saw a news announcement saying Trump's presidency, his re-election, could be compromised by how he's currently responding to the crisis. So expect him to change his tune in order to placate people and try to win the election. He's going to switch his tune really fast. Now, he may be doing it as I'm speaking, but I think he's supposed to be talking within the next hour or something. So don't be surprised if he doesn't try to change his tune, because it is not to his advantage to lose that election. Whereas, as far as the virus goes, I don't think he's paid much attention to it till now. So we're going to find things about that. Things will be a little bit different. But the narcissist, when it comes to illness, in old age particularly, your health is in danger. They will not respond to you or be there for you in a crisis. And this woman, even with her birth or her children, she knew it. So she divorced him, I think, after 5 more years with the 3 kids. And what I often tell them is, if they have 3 children, I said, no, you got 4. You know, you have the big guy. They're like, yeah, you're exactly right. Oh, my God, I always say that. This is my 4th child. I said, yeah. Plus, by the way, you heard me say this, most of you, narcissists marry empaths. So watch your client married to the narcissist. They're emotionally hyper. They're often very sensitive. They're emotionally more sensitive than the average population. Narcissists make terrible decisions and they have to marry empathic individuals. Individuals that'll do all the emotional programming and processing, or the children will come out psycho. So if you find out the children are pretty well adjusted, thank you, mom. You know, thank the partner who did all the emotional feeling processing, because the one who didn't wasn't emotionally available, you know, depended upon you. And so you've been double parenting that entire time, whether you realize it or not. So that's a pretty big piece when it comes to the narcissism and the illness discussion. And that will happen depending on how we're seeing this playing out. What else did we see about that? So let me back to my cancer. So she did. So she then went into a memory at 34, being fired from a job involving depression. And at the time, she was having a very difficult time with her pregnancy. So this is a very empathic individual who got pregnant. The job took advantage of that and said she was having such difficulty maintaining the job and the pregnancy, they ended up firing her, which, you know, takes a lot nowadays with workers' rights and so on. Anyway, they did end up firing her. And between that and her husband not being supportive of her pregnancy, her health was compromised. So it's interesting that when we're working on breast cancer, it went back to the marital stress, and then it went back to pregnancy at 34 and being fired from a job. So it's like the perfect storm occurred at 33 and 34 for the compromise of her health. She had being fired from her job, quit the job, had the baby. The baby's not supported by the husband, is not supporting the pregnancy very much. And it was a difficult pregnancy in both cases with the children. So she did go to when her immune system took an extreme hit at 33 and 34. And then we reframed those back to all the way up to the present time and the diagnosis. And then she saw seafoam brain ran it through her breast and was able to reframe. She then went on to a memory at age 40, where she was at home. She was hurt aching in her lower back and more towards her right sacrum. I'm not sure they ever diagnosed what the problem was with that. But again, it's being unsupported and not very nurtured at home. And she reframed that. She then backed up to a memory, and this is all relating to breast cancer stuff. We reframed her first panic attack at age 20 and got rid of the terror, because she mentioned terrified about the breast cancer, but she'd already had a history of panic attacks. But if you already have a history of irrational fears or panic, then you're always going to go back and diffuse. You want to separate that current fears with cancer from all of the prehistory of panic and anxiety disorders. So you're going to have to treat the anxiety that preceded the fear about the cancer. And so we reframed her first panic attack in the car at age 20. She then did a level 2 in her teenage years that was tied to, this is about sadness and grief. And it was intergenerational. The sadness and depression went back to her mother, her grandmother, and feeling sad, unworthy. And so we did an intergenerational reframe on that, gave that back to the ancestors, released them their stuff, moved colors to her body, released the sadness, and affirmed to them that you're lovable and worthy, and ran vibrant sunset colors. And that's how she ended the first session. Bless you. She then went into, we did a second session relating to her breast cancer. And in the second session, she did 8 memories. They always increase. In the first session, you know, we get anywhere from 4 to 8 memories. But she jumped up to 8 in her second session. She started with a level 1 at age 8, where she had her first migraine, actually. She was in a neighbor's yard on a trampoline, and she fell and hit her head, and it also, I said, well, this is PTSD. I'm not sure it's really migraine, but after the trampoline or during the trampoline episode, somehow she called it a migraine. So we reframed that, no migraine, no impact on her head. I don't think she hit her head during the trampoline, but it must have done something to her spine or her back, I would guess. But it was inside her left eye, and it was aching, and it was her first migraine. So whatever that was about, we reframed it. That was interrupted, though, because I said, how often do you have had migraines? And she said, she went back. Actually, the memory she went back to was about sadness and grief. And many people contributing to that. Not a specific face. And she sort of tsunamied that away. And she used lavender on that one. Her second memory, she went into, second major memory, was beginning at age 15. And she went to her jaw, her mouth, family, dad, mom, feeling sad, insecure, and criticized by her parents, and a lot of shame. So underlying her illness is self-worth issues, shame issues, anxiety issues, migraine issues, and panic attacks. So all of those things can compromise the immune system in varying degrees. So we went after all of it. I'm just like, well, we certainly have to at least boost your health while you're dealing with this breast cancer issue by getting rid of any possibility of migraines or panic attacks. So you're going to want to go for those issues and allow her body to concentrate and focus on healing in the present moment, and certainly not have it amplified. You don't want the anxiety and the panic amplified by any prehistory of anxiety or depression. And so she had the depression, she had the anxiety, she had panic attacks and migraines. So we just went after all of it. So we reframed the migraines, and then she went into, let's see what this is. She went into her early 40s. She's just feeling insecure, overwhelmed, having the 3 needy children, and mostly frustration with herself. She wanted to find better therapy. She had not taken good care of herself in her 30s. Said, I would have gotten better therapy, better care, I've done trauma work like this sooner. So she pictured that and then ran pink through her body, which is interesting, because when you talk about how we got around to this finally, you're like, what is the ribbon for breast cancer? Pink. Why? It has to do with being safe to be a woman and having all of your emotions, having your feelings in a safe context, in a safe way. And with her anxiety history, with her depression history, insecurities, the migraines, and people not supporting her when she was ill, which often the anxiety sets a part of the anxiety is the theme, is anybody going to be there for me if I'm sick? Is anybody going to show up for me? And the panic attack is usually exactly what hers was, alone in the car. And I don't know why it triggered, except that driving and eating and showering are the three things that we do almost on autopilot. And when people are all on autopilot, that's often when the subconscious, the alpha theta state, slips in and inserts a trigger. And so alone in a vehicle in my life, I'm navigating myself through my life. Usually they're alone in the car, nobody's there to help them. And that triggers can very easily trigger feeling like I'm here and I'm unsupported, I'm unprotected. And the next thing you know, they can't breathe. And so that becomes a pretty pretty huge trigger. So she reframed that one. And let's see where she went then. We went into four more memories. Age 50 in the hospital, her dad fell and broke his ankle, so his arm, climbed a ladder and fell. And so she felt some responsibility for taking care of him, frustration, sadness, and tension. And at that point, we did the reparenting exercise. Actually, she inserted new parents. Because part of this was, even though she had low self-esteem, she was feeling responsible for, and she needed new parents. Both of the parents had to be replaced in her history. To bring them into warm, caring, loving, supportive individuals. She did not have that in her life, nor did she marry someone that was very loving and supportive in her life. Once she reframed that, she went to a memory at 37, the doctor's office. What was this? Her second pregnancy. She was seeing a doctor. This was interesting as far as the breast cancer goes. The doctor, she was there for something related to her pregnancy, and he suddenly began a breast exam on her without talking to her, you know, take off your shirt, you know, whatever, and began what she felt was a really violating, humiliating breast exam. I think her husband was in the room with her and just felt like, okay, I'm here for my OBGYN exam. And he began this. She felt he was intrusive and inappropriate. And examining her breasts at 37. So that the point is, no matter what, she switched it to no breast exam and having a nice maybe female doctor with good boundaries, and that she wasn't violated in public context at 37. Something about the way he did it and not talking to her, asking or announcing to her you needed to do this in addition to why he would do it, was upsetting and intrusive to her. And I think she was right. I think he took advantage of her. So that's at 37. So there was sort of breast trauma from sexual intrusion. And then she was at a conference 2 years later with a herniated disc that caused her to limp and went into pain. And that was in her right thigh where the disc manifested. So it manifested in her pelvic region towards her right thigh. And then the final memory that she did, to give you the overall view of how her body worked with this, was a lot of stress and tension mounting inside her family relationship with her and her daughter. And her daughter has some learning issues and is very, very stressful to work with. Has maybe she's partly on the Asperger's continuum and has features and is not communicating properly and can have outbursts of rage and anger as well. And she's had a lot of frustration with her daughter. So all this going into her chest area and dealing with anger issues. So that's just to give you a little bit of an overview. It's not like, you know, you do want to be attentive to contributing factors that would be weakening a person's immune system when we're dealing with illnesses and things of that sort. But it's not as though there is just one specific way of mapping cancer per se, if that makes sense. Any questions about that? We can take off.
Yes, I've got a question, Brent. This is Scott.
Okay, and Karen sent me a couple of questions in advance. So Karen, I'll answer your question too in a moment. Yes, hi, Scott.
when you get a cancer client, to do anything other than address their emotions, you usually need to get a doctor's referral slip just just to cover yourself legally. Do you do that, or do you work around it somehow?
Actually, we are a hotel. We are not under HIPAA. So Miraval is not under HIPAA. If they're seeing me there under HIPAA, we are not bound by any HIPAA guidelines or regulations, actually. So all I'm doing is creative visualization. I guess you call it creative visualization for supporting the immune system to help support her ongoing healing process. We are not in the medical arena.
Now, okay,
my software, technically, they don't ask for my medical record. She doesn't ask me to give anything. Doctor doesn't ask me to do anything. She's going to a spa. So now, if you are, however, under HIPAA and you are working under those guidelines and you do need that kind of referral and you're doing it under your license, then you have to take a look at that and see what needs to happen there. But I'm not, I checked. I said, Miraval's not it. Unless they had some reason to believe there's a malpractice of putting my hand on their back at C7. Caused some kind of a neural conflagration. And one tried to do something like that. Miraval basically laughed at him and said, it's ridiculous. You have nine. I recorded her history. She had 9 spinal traumas before I ever met her. And all I did was touch her back. She's like, he injured my back. I'm like, well, you know, it might be when your brother hit you with a shovel in your back when you were 7. That could be the real source of the trauma. When you beat your sister over the head with a Coke bottle trying to kill her when you were 8. You know, or a couple of the other 2 car accidents related to your drunk driving, you know, that might have been, she never called us back. She never returned the call. That's the advantage of taking a decent history in the beginning, is that she's like, oh, I think he touched my back and my pain increased. I said, it probably did, because you opened your mind to being willing to work on your back trauma, and you have 11 traumas to your back, at least recorded. And I said, I'm not surprised your body wants you to do more. But it would be helpful if you had a relapse and started drinking a bottle of wine a night in addition to your back problem. You know, and I'm not being sarcastic here, but I'm just making it in the time we have. That's the way the insurance dealt with it too. Like, if she calls us back, we'll give her the data. And she never called them back. They offered. But she's drinking again, and she relapsed. And she was thinking, she lost her job, they fired her, and she was thinking to get some money from Hyatt, is what that was about. So anyway, but do protect yourself. And the fact that she had signed my disclaimer, her first obsession was, I signed some kind of disclaimer. I don't have a copy. I gave her a copy. I don't have my copy of it. What did it really say? It said that if you're drinking, using, and she mentioned she was taking Xanax, PRN. I was like, that the effects of HMR could be negated or reversed by your drug use. And then your pain could come back or be returned on you. So I was like triply protected. But Hyatt said, unless she got hit by a rock on the property or a tree fell on her, Hyatt won't cover her injury expenses. You know, there's nothing to indicate you did anything wrong to her or anything like that. So as far as that goes, that was good to know. Like, well, no, we're not a medical facility where I'm currently working. But if they were referred to you for proceeding with something to do with stress, trauma, with the cancer, you're right. You would probably need some kind of referral from the doctor or physician relating to treating her cancer. But it's more like related to treating her anxiety disorder and her migraines, and trying to get her immune system, they would refer her maybe to a therapist to decrease the cortisol levels due to her migraines and her panic attacks, so that the cancer treatment could be the primary focus, is what I would say about that client.
How did you do the intergenerational reframe? You said that one of your clients here, that the relatives, that the ancestors had some trauma.
Mom was depressed. My grandmother was depressed. She went into that. I said, if you could take all the sadness that you feel, because it was clear that it seemed bigger than her, so to speak. So bigger than she. So I said, okay, if you could pile up all the sadness, grief, how big a lake is that? And you say, oh, it's huge. So what I usually do is pile. Some of you asked about intergenerational work. So if you could pile up all of that outside, it could be a mountain, it could be a lake. I said, can you see who's behind it, if it's a mountain, or on the far side of it? Who's in the lineup? She says, oh, many generations. It goes back. A lot of people say, some will say it goes back as far as I can see. Others will say it goes back at least 3 generations. I can't see past that. I said, so if you could return to those generations, what's their sadness, their depression, their traumas, or ask their higher selves to help them heal and release what's really theirs, Can you see how much of the lake or the mountain disappears? Oh, yes, and I can see. The weirdest case of intergenerational transfer I ever saw was when I was working with a client and I scanned her left ear. I may have talked about this case somewhere, as I talked about it in trains. Left ear, and I felt it stabbing like an ice pick in the left ear. And it's like homicide. I mean, I only felt that like 5 times, and it was truly homicidal individuals. But I felt like she was being stabbed in her left ear. Now, obviously, the person's alive, and so she may have had an ear trauma. So I said, do you have a serious ear trauma? It feels physical to me. No. I said, this is on your mother's side. Was your mother physically violent? No, but her father was. I said, so let's do this. If you could take this pain out of your ear and pile it up, all the violence from your mother, it's kind of what I'm doing with you with level 2. It could be a cancer, could be a sadness, depression, violence, forever's violence. Let's pile the violence up outside of you at a safe distance. Can you see how big the pile is? Oh, it's huge. I was like, okay, if you could ask the pile, because I take the pressure off of them, it's a kind of clever little indirect thing, take the pressure off of them. If you could pile up in front of them what's really their stuff. I said, can you see grandpa's stuff and your mother's stuff? Oh, grandpa has a huge pile. I can't see him anymore. Mother's pile is just like kind of just above her knees. I was like, okay. So if you could return that to them, what would you like to do? Well, mom, I'll just hand it back to grandpa, drop it on his head, throw it at him, whatever, give it back. As he knows it's energy. Let's return that, give that back. Someone say, I want to hand it to their higher selves. I don't want to hurt anybody. I want to give it to the karma angels and let them process it. Let the angels process the karmic release on that. Some would say, I just want to walk away from it. Or I want to burn it up. A lot of people say, I want to burn it up. Let's burn it up. Nice. Okay, how much is left that's actually yours? A very small amount. Now, it's interesting when it came to that grandfather thing and the violence, because I said, do you have any idea why the violence would be in your left ear from your mother? She said, oh, well, her father was very violent, beat her all the time. In fact, it was said in the town he was in that he killed a man, he got away with it. And they also, she said, when they had their first child, it was born handicapped. So he went out and buried it. I was like, alive? She's like, yeah, it might have still been alive, I think. I'm not sure about that story. Nobody talks about it. I'm like, well, okay, he's a double homicidal person. That would explain the ice pick on the ear kind of thing I was getting. Like, why is there homicide in your left ear on your mother's side? But that raises the point. I was shocked because I said, it's true. It means the intergenerational violence can be transmitted energetically intact to the next generation. And even though her mother was never homicidally violent with her, enough of it transferred to the mother that when the mother verbally abused her, some of that violence was transferred and piggybacked into her auditory channel through her mother. So the sins of the fathers being visited on the next generation is true. DNA has the capacity to transfer the energy, apparently, to the next generation. So it can be passed on. Epigenetics is confirming that with the weird patterns of allergies to sunflowers or something is going from mice from one generation. Once they introduce it, it goes to 3 generations or something, but it can skip one sometimes. But they're getting part of the epigenetics through that. But so intergenerational, pile it up, do the level 2 metaphor, ask to see behind the metaphor in the distance, everybody contributing to it. And then release back in an appropriate way that the client's comfortable with to those generations what's really their stuff that you can't heal. If they say they won't take it back, you offer it to their higher self. That generally always works, except the client says, I don't think my ex-husband had one of those, you know, higher self. Like, okay, well, maybe give it to God or the angels, whatever you believe in about that. So we release the intergenerational pattern. And then what colors do you move through your body to know that you can heal yourself, you release from that, and always feel a lot lighter afterwards. In one case, when I asked the client why she kept trying to get love from this alcoholic, sex-addicted, abusive mother, we did the intergenerational request. I kind of went back to say, no, she went back, so it goes back 5 generations. I see a woman in France, and her town's being invaded, and she got raped. And she's really angry. She's violently angry. And she has the child, but she's furious with the child. It says, that's my great-great-grandmother. And then it goes to my great-grandmother, and my grandmother, who was perfectionistic and critical. And then it goes to my mother, who's alcoholic and abusive and critical. I could never do anything right. When she was like 3 years old, her mother said, what's wrong with you? Are you like a mongoloid or something? And she thought she was calling her a monster. obviously, and just shame. That was the core belief beneath all of her lists. It took like 13 memories to get to the core memory on that session. And the memory was, is there even like a mongoloid? And she'd know what that was as a three-year-old in the memory. And she thought from that day forward, her mother thought she was a monster. So the whole thing about why I'm desperate to get love from my mommy who thinks I'm a monster went all the way back to an act of monstrosity in the French Revolution or something, where the great-great-great-grandmother was raped in a town, gave birth to a child that she resented, and because of her beliefs, couldn't do anything else, and led to her. So when she saw that, she says, oh my goodness, she says, I think I was the woman that got raped in the French Revolution. So we reframed the original rape in the French Revolution. Her need for her attachment to fix her mother went away. She's like, well, I kind of set it up. It's my responsibility. So she saw if she reframed that, all the generations shifted. Each generation shifted. They weren't as violent. They weren't as aggressive. They weren't as abusive. Her mother didn't have this. It should be different. She saw the whole thing, reframed it. And finally, the desperate clinging attachment to her mother. It wasn't love from her mother. It goes back five generations to healing the rape and the violation that she felt and what it did to her self-worth then when it happened. Once she did that, now as far as I know, she's the latest check-in that I did with her husband recently was she hasn't had contact with those parents in the last 10 years now and is detached completely from them, which is good because they're still alcoholic and narcissistic and violently addicted. And I didn't think she'd make it if she stayed in touch, and she disconnected. She was able to do it after we did the work, but that was the when you feel that feeling like they're still so attached to that, trying to get love from a parent that's clearly, rationally, obviously abusive, that's when you want to look, is there a deeper attachment? And that's where it implies the intergenerational connection. So that often is the case. Does that help, Scott, somewhat?
Yeah, that is very interesting.
Yeah. Brent, yes. I have a question. Is it normal for people with chronic pain, fibromyalgia, all that? Like when I start working with them, they decline technically. I had this woman that she came in, she said, help me, my body is in pain. Since I saw it this, first time.
We're talking about disease. There's a thing about this, that when you activate HMR and you stress the system because you are putting pressure, bringing people into memory, you're bringing them close to T-1, which can drive up the adrenals. So in a sense, it's like when you work out, they tell you when you've been sick and you work out, when you do exercise and you work out, it puts stress on your immune system. It stresses the immune system to push yourself into a healthy recovering place. So there is something about that with HMR that can cause, I think, a brief backlash or something with the system. Oh, I want to heal. But if they're so weakened that they're not stabilized, grounded, strengthened, supported, tell them, you need to really eat right and you need to surround them with maybe some body work or some massage or something along with the HMR, you're going to need to boost it. Because if they're already in a compromised immune system, to bring up two memories quickly, you might have to limit the number of memories they do. You might have to see how tired they're getting if they're doing it. But the other thing is, I think there could be just triggering the core memories that compromise the immune system originally. And you want to just work through that as promptly as you can without, and give them some relief. You don't want to linger
They feel better now, but they said, I felt so heavy.
Well, it's kind of like with a lot of reversals when you do cancers and viruses and trauma imprints, when they go through the reversing of the induction process, how it was induced. Often it is like a homeopathic. Sometimes they go through, I think, like an HMR reversal, is that the symptoms reverse themselves sometimes. I haven't seen it happen many times, but it's possible. But anytime you do a lot of memory work, they're gonna initially be very tired. Like after you do, understand every memory a person accesses and reframes affects all seven nerve centers. Every memory is contributed to color-wise by all seven color projection centers. So if you do seven memories in a session, in the major nerve centers, they're going through 49 changes, 49 shifts. We focus on one holographic fragment, but the holographic image and fragment is a projection of all seven nerve centers. So if you change the frequency of one, you change the frequency of all seven. You're shifting, you're creating a new picture. So all of there's a little recalibration with every single memory that occurs. So with the recalibration of the memories, you do that times seven, you do the times, I did a client, the first time I did a session where she did 16 memories. I was like, holy mackerel. She'd been in 12 step programs and she just zipped through. I'm like, 16 times seven. She's like, I feel a little tired at the end of the session. I said, yeah, you might need a nap, you know, rest. Or what I do is I refer them to the saline pools at Miraval, the heated salt pools. And I said, go to the heated saline pool. Soak in there, run your colors through and do your two finger, the Donna Eden hookup, you know, the regrounding in the body with the meridians. Did you do the grounding with her at the end?
Yeah.
Ramon, okay, yeah, remember to reground her because they'll be really tired. If they're already compromised when they come in, you know, you're just trying to give them some relief.
We usually reduce the pain from like a 10 when she walks in to like a 2. We never got to a 0 yet.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes I think they've come in when their body's built up to a 10 and the best, here's the thing with disease. And so we're in the disease theme universe right now, right? Coronaviruses and everything else. Is that if the damage is already done, you and I have to do our best and then we have to all detach from the outcome.
Yeah.
When I've gotten rheumatoid arthritis early enough, it's reversed. In the first 3 to 6 months, you can reverse some of it. It's new. It's not calcified yet. But if after three, they reach you, they didn't hear about your work till after you've been at it for 3, 10, 15 years, you're not going to undo what's already damaged. So the real question to the immune system is, which we haven't been able to answer. We need a lot of technological data and research on this to know is how soon enough in the application of HMR with some clients can it reverse? And it does depend upon the pathology, how progress the pathology is in the individual. My guess is it's going to depend on how many other areas of their nervous system and immune system have already been compromised with other traumas. Those with bigger trauma loads, and like the client with the breast cancer. She wanted to work on breast cancer, but her body threw us pretty quickly into anxiety, depression, and migraines. So with those three conditions, how are you going to treat her breast cancer if she's capable of having a migraine or a panic attack? She's going to get terrified about the treatments. She's going to, you know, we had to reframe the precursors, the early ones that preceded that. And that went all the way back to give it her new, it went back to reparenting. She needed new parents. You know, in the beginning, we had to give her a new set of parents because she was not ever safe. Therefore, it left her depressed. If she had some kind of new parent safety grounding, it's like, oh, okay. Then I don't need to be fearful or panic. There will be people there for me. Unfortunately, I think when I worked on it, she's still married to the narcissistic person like her parents. So she's not protected with the husband. She is getting breast cancer. She's not sure he's going to be there for her. He wasn't there to really support her raising her three children. And she felt inadequate as a mother raising the three children. So if you can get a global picture of the person's overall immune system status in all these areas, then you can have a better picture of how trauma-wise we might approach the treatment of her illness. Because it's going to be done boosting the immune system in all those areas if you can. Our body, I wouldn't worry about it. If you get freaked out by it, just say, what do we need to work on here today? They come into you, by the time they have cancer or illness, they have huge trauma histories. You're not going to figure out how to map that piece for them. They're going to have to show you. Their body will show you. If you engage the process, calm them down, make them safe, the body will show you eventually a primary site or memory to begin working on. But it can be challenging.
Have you worked with anyone with Lyme disease?
I have.
How you reframe that? I mean, I went to the diagnostic, right?
Is it a bacterial thing that's inserted? Is it a viral thing? I think it's bacterial, isn't it?
It's a bacteria, yes.
I have less, HMR probably is a little less effective. Bacterial thing needs to be supported. Although I will say this, the light machine that I originally helped to fund its development, I have no financial benefits from any of that. But there is a machine that when I took one of my clients that had Lyme disease for years, and she was under the light machine for 5 minutes, all of her pain disappeared. So like, what the heck? It's a photonic light machine that charges the body. You can always look at something called the Dream Spa. And there's several devices out there like that now, but it basically is based on recharging the photonic field of the body, the toroidal field. If you look up Light Health Research.
Light Health Research?
It's about a $1,200 machine. But that's what I've been bringing on retreats for years. and people get under the light machine, the dream spa, and they stay. It's a half hour treatment until your body's fully recharged, and then you can do maintenance on it periodically. When I had the thing in December, I put myself under it almost every day, sometimes twice a day. And it seemed to help keep it from going into a more severe viral kind of thing. But the person that I had, so there may be things like homeopathics for Lyme. I don't know, Lyme disease and it being bacterial, you can treat it by treating other aspects of the immune system. Anytime you, like we're saying today, we're talking about viruses, coronavirus freaked out. Anytime you heal the immune system, you're going to benefit your, I mean, anytime you heal your memories, you're going to boost your immune system. We had a client who did three or four sessions with me inpatient for HIV. He also got sober and got nutrition, which helped all of it together. And by the time he got out of treatment and went back to California, his T cell count had gone up by 850 points. He was considered technically in remission. And he's like, I'm considering remission now after doing the work with you. And I'm like, well, good. That's what we needed to know. And there are cases where we've had trouble in California. When Dr. Tanaka did some work with HIV patients, they had trouble finding the virus in the system after doing enough HMR. So your clients, if you're talking to them about this whole coronavirus, fears of viruses, nicest thing you can do for yourself and your body is keep reframing your memories ongoing in an ongoing manner. Keep clear when things get triggered, fears, anxieties, boost your immune system.
Have you worked with people with migraines who you couldn't help?
Yes. And I'm going to ask, can I get to Carol's question? Carol sent me a question today, so I want to talk to her about this. This is a really interesting question. Yes, I've worked with people whose migraines weren't touched by this. In fact, got worse. One of them, they found ultimately was a circulatory thing congenital in her brain and had nothing to do with HMR whatsoever. It was not a memory-based issue. Although the anxiety about having the migraines could be a little bit reframed, but they kept getting worse anyway because you had to straighten out the circulatory condition. I had another gentleman, his wife flew in from New York to me to work on me in New York at the New Yorker Hotel, actually. And he had been working for a government agency or agencies, had been in Syria at one time when his migraines were progressing. And so I took a history as much as he could tell me about it, worked with him, reframed his memories, reframed a lot of memories. And that night, he slept for 6 hours straight without any real migraine pain. But the next morning, it came back, and it was as strong as it had ever been. When I went to scan him the next day after reframing what I felt, I couldn't feel anything at all. I felt no migraine pain, no nothing. So I don't think it was memory-based. I think he was exposed. He did go through Syria and some countries that had used biochemical toxins in war on the populations. And I think he was kind of scooting around secretly in some war zones. And either he was exposed to an agent or somebody injected him with an agent or passed it on to him. Because I think he had some kind of an untraceable toxin or something in his system. And his migraines are getting worse and worse, and no machine that we're aware of could detect anything wrong with him. But I felt sorry for him because I'm sorry. I said, I don't think this is memory-based. There's no memory here. I felt nothing, zero. That's rare. I mean, even knowing you have a migraine, but I did reframe the worry and the fear about it and the medical piece of it. And we released that and blew that up or burned it up or whatever. But by the next day it was back full force and came back and I couldn't touch it and I couldn't feel it. So the only advantage is with this technique and the way I'm calibrated is I'm a memory scanner. If I feel it, it's memory-based. I don't pick up purely physiological, genetic, or environmental things. I don't pick up, some of you may have that ability. That's not my forte. I'm not teaching about that. I'm teaching about working specifically with memory-based pathology, which for most people, the majority of their pain is memory-based pathology. But we do have genetic predispositions. We can have intergenerational stuff. But even that can be felt if it's memory-based, memory-related. So even intergenerational it can be passed on, but this thing. So yeah, I've had some that I couldn't touch and I have no idea. I think they'd have a rare allergy, an allergen or something they're reacting to. I don't know.
Is the same person with Lyme disease and they saw lesions in her brain?
Mm. So something probably happened to her, but they may not know the source or the cause. It's hard to treat.
And they thought it's a mess, but then it's not a mess. And some people with migraines.
Some people who have had success treating MS and people that were not successful treating MS. I've had partial success. It's kind of like how much of the MS is memory based, how much of the MS diagnosis. Fibromyalgia is a catch diagnosis of 15 variables. If you
15
work
what?
15 different variables. If you got like six or seven of them, they give you the label of fibromyalgia. But in reality, if you work with different parts of the immune system and work on all the different memories, most of my coordinators in California, in New Hampshire, in Louisiana, but other places, majority of places, it's been in remission by working on all the different groups of memories. They went into remission in the majority of cases. But if it's not primarily memory-based or there are other causes for the compromise of the immune system, I will say this for fibromyalgia, look for a belief system that has to do with sort of anger that's tied into, how do I want to describe it, frozen mobility. Usually I see parents are like, oh, you can do anything you set your mind to. You'll be very successful, you'll be very powerful, but be careful. So she goes to ballet, hurts her ankle. See, now we tell you to be careful. You're going to break your ankle and never be able to dance again and blame yourself. So they give you very positive messages and they completely contradict. Back and forth, back and forth. So where fibromyalgia comes up is in the muscles and tissue that has to do with mobility and going forward in life. Oh yeah, you can do anything you set your mind to, but be careful if you hurt yourself, there are consequences. Oh yeah, wait a minute, you told me I could do anything, but now you tell me I'm gonna get myself killed. So let's say, go for it, set yourself. Oh, but you have to be very careful. Don't do anything that'll put yourself in harm's way. But you told me I could do anything I set my mind to. So that immobility causes, I think I've seen it I felt it as a paralysis on the level of mobilization. So it's just about to express itself, and then you have to freeze because they stop you. They shut you down. So it's often an inflammation when it comes to movement or musculature or going forward in life. So fibromyalgia does tie into that kind of a belief system. That's the own. Now, there may be other causes and sources for it, but that's the common pattern that I've seen occurred in multiple cases when it comes to mobilization. Let me answer Karen's question. Karen had a really interesting question too about, and we're talking about people with these multiple diagnoses, that's gonna be your greatest challenge because they're labeling. When you really don't, we don't know the source. Sometimes I'm like, oh, this is too complicated for me. I'm just gonna ask her body. I'm just gonna ask her body where to start and let her body tell me where to begin. And the body will, it'll give you guidance. So, Karen, you had a really interesting case where you talked about a client who was proceeding to make herself safe, I believe, and the inner child didn't want to be alone. Is that correct?
Yes. So we were ending the session. We had gone through, she had brought the colors in and reframed. We did several memories, and I encouraged her to invite that 8-year-old to her safe space. And so there was an interaction there. There was some communication back and forth, sort of soothing that 8-year-old and just having a conversation. And so then when it was like, okay, we are going to wrap things up, the 8-year-old was like, what, you're going to leave me here all by myself in this? And so my client created interacted with the 8-year-old and created a lovely little tent space, a small little tent with cushions and pillows, and she felt safe. And
nice.
So in that scenario too, and at the end when we were discussing the session, again, that usually happens, the client is quite surprised about the different issues that came up, some of the issues relating to her mother and things like that, that again, were not the reason for coming in for the session, right? It was this knee pain and da da da. And so some of these things of abandonment.
Right knee or left knee? It was left knee?
Both knees. She had some serious injury.
And the child was how old in the memory?
8.
Yeah.
And then, I was looking at the knee thing, and it's around 10 or so.
It can fluctuate by 2 or 3
years.
Right. Lack of support in her early childhood years, pre-adolescent years. Yeah. Right. So when it comes to not the safe scene being compromised or a feature being missing, they're telling you what the next cue is. Mm-hmm. So if I can't alone this, she can't be alone. That child part can't be alone. There's a trigger mechanism there. So you're going to want to say when you really feel that feeling that you can't be alone. And you're really scared. Where do you feel that in your body? If you have time, that'll be the next session probably. But take a look at that and see what that trigger is, because there's another memory there, or a whole series of memories about aloneness that would be going on. Anytime the safe scene is disrupted or incomplete, or the child tells you they're missing something, they're cueing you to the next step as to what the next memory will be. So obviously you're onto it already alone.
Yeah, in the discussion, because we did spend time in terms of making it safe.
Enhancing safety. Good. Now, let me mention this to Karen. You can the adult self can clone themselves. They can leave a part of their adult self in the scene.
Okay,
with
that's
the child.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like
so you know, you can leave. This is holographic space. Leave the adult you with the child. Create a part of you. I said, clone yourself. You can do a holographic clone. Clone your maternal self and leave yourself in the scene with the child. Say, I'll never leave you, which is true. The adult self owns the body. But if they want to make that like a 24-hour day alert self, you know, you can kind of picture like, oh, is it okay to leave a part of yourself always with this child that they'll never be alone? You can you want you to stay with her always and be in the scene. It's not as common, but you can do that. There's no reason
you can't. I did suggest that, for her to let the 8-year-old know that she was always there, that she's she's there. But when they were having this interaction, my client and her 8-year-old self, and in the post discussion, my client was sharing that it was interesting, the conversation that they were having and what was being exchanged, and that there was this attitude of like a push and pull between the 8-year-old and the older self, where it's like, yes, I want my independence, but I still want to, again, have that safety and protection. And so at the end, it was very much resolved in the sense that the 8-year-old was like, yeah, no, you can go. I'm good. I've got my space. And so it was this finding this balance of knowing that she was safe and secure, but then also having her own independence and that that was her space. And it wasn't for her to come into this little tent that was the 8-year-old's little space.
Her own little space.
It was an interesting session, yeah.
Yeah, that is good. Well, you have to work with these child parts like you would with a real child. That they're, you know, like, well, they don't trust you yet. Right. She hasn't built up trust. Or after being hurt by this many adults, it's kind of common for her to like, well, I want to go back to my room. My safe place is my bedroom or by myself. And I want to sleep in my own bed with my own comforter and my teddy bear or whatever, you know, and they'll want it to be on their terms. So yes, that's quite common. But it also tells you that there's more trauma involved if they're not safe around people, around the nurturers. And she has to have that need for her own space suggests there's really been that spatial violation of some sort that you want to be attentive to. And that she is probably going to give you more memories about people invading her space and not having a right to her own space. Maybe you've already done some of that work with the history. And it's not uncommon. Even after you heal, it's like, I still like my own quiet time. I don't like a lot of people around me all the time because I was abused by too many people over too much a period of time. So that's quite common. Anything the inner child says is about the scene needing to be changed or accommodated. So I'll give you a weird example. It's extreme, but when I worked inpatient, I had a woman who had been abused by a cult. And after 2 weeks, finally, the inner child would make a little bit of contact with her and she wouldn't leave the abuse scene. And finally, the child said, okay, I'll leave the cult. I'll leave the abuse scene where they're shocking me with electrodes and sexually abusing me. I will leave them if you allow me to keep 2 electrodes on my chest. And I was like, okay, that's so weird. But anyway, I said, okay, fine. Tell her whatever she needs is okay. So the inner child would leave and she'd go sit with her on, they came from a southern city, to sit with her on the levee, but she would have to sit like 6 feet apart from her and she would never look at the adult. And the adult could sit on the levee and they could both look at the water together. This happened for 2 weeks. They could look at the water together, but she didn't want her to touch her. Don't touch me. Then after 2 weeks, they started getting a little closer. Like, can I put my arm around you? Yes. But she wouldn't turn her face around. She wouldn't make herself vulnerable by showing her face. And the electrodes would not come up. She wouldn't, no, don't talk about the electrodes. No, I'm not taking those off. So I'm like, wow, this is just, we're in a weird holographic space here. You know, holographic space, I want you to get a feel for it. Holographic space in the mind of the client. You want to really be aware of where the child is at. Are they in the tent? Are they safe? Are they not? What do they need? Make sure they have everything they need. Send them a bunny. Mm-hmm. Send them a puppy. If they don't trust people, send them an animal. Send in a toy. I've used bunnies, puppies, cats, you know, doggies, you know, whatever, teddy bears, anything that the child grabbed the dog and said, huh, I'm still staying here by myself, but I'm not letting you go. But I got the puppy now. So they're laughing. But you made contact. You know, mm-hmm. you're working with that. So for 2 weeks, she wouldn't take the electrodes off her. And they used to shock her. And then someone would come in and pretend they're being comforting her and sexually abuse her. She wouldn't take the electrodes off. So finally, when she got closer to her and could talk with her, she said, why won't you take the electrodes off? She says, well, I'll take them off now. She said, but when mommy and daddy used to leave me alone in the crib in the baby bed with no food, no water, no changed diaper, and I was in pain and starving to death, she said, that cult took care of me, and that was better than nothing at all. So until you can prove that you're better than the cult, and going to keep me safe and feed me and nurture me and make me safe, I'm not taking the electrodes off. Mm. And she says, because that was better than nothing at all. And I have to make sure you're not going to abandon me. So it's really about the abandonment issue. And as soon as she proved to her that she'd be there for all the time and nurture her and take care of her, she took the electrodes off. And for the first time, she turned around and they made eye contact and they looked into each other's eyes. She wouldn't show her face. It was so much shame and fear and distrust. So the inner child parts have a very real, sensitive, traumatized agenda. And you have to honor the parts. And you did a really nice job with that, you know, the parts and the feelings. And we'll take all the time you need and let's make her own little tent and make sure she has everything she needs. But that you're right here outside, nearby. And that if she has anything, she can ask you for help. Or that will be a part of you that stays with her. Or sometimes they like to bring in their own angel, like a truly spiritual being or an animal guardian or something. It's an animal totem. Make sure you're concerned that you want to make sure they're protected. Right. Is it okay if she could say, can I stay with you as your mom? You know, can I be here with you and take care of you? Or do you want somebody else? So you have to work with the client's belief system about that. But you're doing a great job with her own little tent, her own little space. But it suggests there's been real damage to trusting people and getting close to people, getting, you know.
Yeah.
You well, the see interesting, where it's headed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the interesting thing when we talk about space and having your own space, what came up in the discussion was the fact that, and it came up also in the reframing, which again surprised my client because she didn't realize the impact of that, was that she went to school at a school that her mother taught at. So part of this reframing was that she went to another school because any time anything happened, people would go and tell her mother, you know. And so one of the issues that came up is she was in some science class and she wasn't understanding anything that was going on, and she was afraid that the teacher was going to call on her. And then just through that conversation, yes, it came up that it just, yeah, whatever might happen, it would get back to her mother. And so being at another school, that in a sense creates that extra space, doesn't it? And so,
Gotcha. Very good. Yeah. Well done on that. Nicely done. Yeah. I was amazed.
Cloning. I like the cloning.
Yeah. So you can clone a part of yourself. Yeah. I was like, how many inner children are there? Oh my God, there are 6,322 of them. I'm like, well, you have time to clone yourself. You know, like send each of them, give each of them a hug. Tell them there's a part of you that will stay with each of them. Oh, they like that. They each want their own version of me, you know. Because different children at different ages, different parts have different demands on you. And I was like, there's no limit to what we can create in terms of parts, you know, if we choose to creatively. So you can clone yourself. You can create another version that will stay there with that, because that is your desire to let her know you'll always be there with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good.
Wanted to touch on the piling up when you talked about if you could see all these people that might, yes, or who might be involved. I'm curious to know what percentage, on sort of just kind of on average for you, that you have people say that, no, I'm going to take whatever this icon is, and I'm going to deal with it and not give it to these others. I tend to see that most people want to deal with the issue, if you want to call it that, and not pass it to whomever they see appearing.
That's true. And a lot of times, like, I'd just rather shove it off a cliff. I give them the mm-hmm. option. Like, I say, this isn't your stuff.
Right, yeah.
You know, here's the cure for that. I'm taking it all on and being a little, you're trying to make sure they're not codependent, right? And they're not mm-hmm. taking on an inappropriate responsibility for others. So what often I use the phrase is, you do understand that if you take it on and don't give some things back, that they can't see it or recognize it in order to heal it.
Okay.
So if you don't return to them their portion, their karma, their issue, mm-hmm. now if they're not ready and they deny they have one, then give it to their higher self. But you don't know their colors and you can't heal their memories.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're being their beast of burden or being their scapegoat doesn't serve them or you. It leaves you burdened with it. And you don't know their colors. You don't know how to heal their memories. So you can turn it over to the karma angel. Sometimes you do that. Or turn it over to their higher self. Or ask divine law enforcement, God, the angels, whatever they believe in, to handle that part of it. But if it's not your stuff and you can't fix it, then you're holding on to it. Sometimes I'll say, it kind of delays their healing. If you're not willing mm-hmm. to at least help them recognize what they've done or give them a consequence or hand it back. Ultimately, after this lifetime, they will, but it may not be as much that. Some people are like, no, I don't want to hurt anybody. I'll say, you're not. So I said, one thing I do also is like separate them from their behaviors. Picture the person's behaviors out here in the desert. What would you like to do that? Oh, that I can blow the hell up. Okay, well, let's blow up their behaviors. Let's burn up the pile of destructive behaviors. Now you care about the person, but you are destroying, you're getting this energy out of your body. The goal is find a way to get the energy from them carrying it, bearing it, internalizing it. Externalize the energy so it's released from the system. I really am not particular how they do that. You're right, though. A lot of people say, I don't want to hurt anybody. I feel guilty if I hurt my mom or hurt somebody else. I don't want to hurt you. So no, you don't have to do that. I said, do you want to show it to them? Do you want to hand it to them? Do you want to let them see what they, I'll just show it to them, I'll show it to them, that's fine. So I had several clients this week, so I just want to show it to them. I'm not going to hurt them, I just want to show them what they did, and then I can let it go. Okay. Others will say, one of them this week said, I don't want it to hurt them, but I do want them to learn from it. I said, some clients' favorite solution is send it through them as an empathy wave. Let them feel what they did to you, just for a moment. Let them feel what they did. Send it through them as an empathy wave. Give them the video, the 3D video. Just send it through them. What happens if you send the empathy, the feeling of what you did, what happened, if you send it through their bodies? Oh, they understand now. I said, that's the goal. Love is understanding. You're teaching them to love. You're teaching them understanding. You're sending it through them as an empathy wave. And some will say, yeah, they can handle it. Some will say, they don't really care. They're narcissists. They don't want to empathize with me at all. As long as just give it to their higher self and let it go. Like, nah, I don't want to even do that. I don't have anything to do with it. I'm going to shut it off a cliff. Let's do that. Blow it up.
Yeah.
The point is they're getting it out of their energy field.
Right, yeah. No, they do deal with it. It's just very curious, like you said earlier. It's like, it's not their stuff, but yet they're prepared to, like you said, throw it off a cliff or blow it up or whatever it is. But the ones that have people show up and do take whatever that burden is, those have been super powerful exchanges where, because sometimes, I just get prompted, like, is that person wanting to share anything with you in this, recognition and really moving statements and just an exchange of love. And that brings so much healing for the person.
If there's a gift from it, what's the gift?
Yeah.
If you can convert it into a positive, and run the lesson. What's the lesson through your body? Release the negative portion. And what color would you move through your body to integrate that as wisdom that you've learned from that, and that you're more loving and they are more understanding, though you go your separate ways maybe, but that you're both grateful. When you're grateful, I tell you, when you're grateful, it's done. There's no charge left attached.
Yeah.
when you move into gratitude, if there's still anger, resentment, frustration, like, okay, is that your stuff? And if you still feel angry about that, where are you feeling that now? And there's another memory or something anchoring it or preceding it, maybe hooking it in.
Yeah,
that's good though. Okay. Yeah, nice. Yeah, a lot of people are, some people are very about, oh no, I just transmute it into wisdom for myself. I'm like, ooh, take all the time you need to do that, transmute that into wisdom. I'm like, no, I'll compost it. I'll turn to put it in my garden and turn it into something else. Say, well, let's take all this stuff from your family and compost it. That's great too. So you just work with their belief systems and how they, but you do want to, like, okay, I feel lighter. I got it out of my body. At least I'm not carrying it. You just want to make sure they're not in a codependency state where they're carrying something and mortaring or, you know, playing out some kind of role where they think they're supposed to carry this or, you know, oh no, my mother, you know, if they've been like the scapegoat in the family's history or the mediator, peacekeeper for everything, there's a real tendency to hang on to that stuff and want to make it theirs. That's their identity. And I was like, you know, you can assist them, but, what I often tell people is you slow down their healing process if you carry it. If they need it back in order to heal it, you might need to hand it to them or their higher self so they can heal that eventually because you don't know their colors. Mm-hmm. We're not allowed to heal their memories, their pain, their trauma. And if it's their stuff, you help them by giving that back. Even I think on the other side, those that have passed on, if we're still holding the memory trapped and they're still abusing us, they're karmically bound to us down on this plane. There's a part of their energy still trapped in our psyche. And so that's, I believe, what karma is that when that energy, that frozen, that trauma. So holding on to it, you trying to fix it, I was like, give it back, release it so they can heal it. We don't know where it came from sometimes, but you do need to give that back so they can heal it. So we'll have a little conversation about that sometimes. The nice part about HMR is you can pause the process and educate, you know, during the technique too, while you're doing it. And say, well, where's that coming from? You know, what is that about? Why are you holding on to that? Well, I don't want to hurt anybody. Oh, well, let's put your mom and dad over on the side. We all love our parents. Some part of us loves our parents, but their behaviors. What would you like to do if you piled up the behaviors in the desert here in Tucson? What do you want to do with that? You know, one thing I've been doing lately with anger issues, particularly for the women that repress their anger and cancer. We're talking about cancer. A lot of my clients, if I touch them and I burn, if you touch the client, your hand just burns when you touch them, their C7 point. You'll get that with fibromyalgia. You'll get that with cancers. You'll get that with, not anxiety. What do you get with? I'm trying to think. There's other stuff where they're inflamed. And they're the quietest, most demure looking people. And I touch them and I'm on fire. And I'm like, you know, you seem like a really calm person. Have you been a little frustrated lately? I have been so ticked off at my ex. I'm like, okay, well, there we go. So the burning feature. So I said, you know what? I said, sometimes towards the end of the session, I'll say, we need to just pause this process for a moment. I'm going to make a suggestion. I want you to be a dragon lady. And for the day, pile up in the desert, all the men, all the people that pissed you off, that ticked you off. And I want you to breathe fire because I can feel their throats are repressed. Their hands have been holding maybe anger in their hands or wrists, you know, it could be shoulders. I said, you've been holding on. I said, touch your secret. And I touched them and they're burning. I'm like, they're in an inflammatory state. They need an anti-inflammatory diet to begin with. They're going to have to cool down. This is way too hot. There's too much fire in the system. Anger, fire, hatred, this will set the system off. So I was, you know, like, okay, so we need to do the anti-inflammatory thing. So I said, I want you to be the dragon. I do it with males too. I said, you can start off as a red dragon. By the time you finish breathing all your fire, you'll probably be a blue dragon, actually. You'll be calmer and cooler, a green dragon. I said, but picture yourself, especially Erica, if you're hearing, you know, the Erica, the Japanese. I said, you need to be the dragon traditions, you know, dragon element. I said, be the dragon lady for a day, fly around, breathe fire, let all of the anger out of all of the pores and orifices of your body, let all the anger from the abuse out of your body, just let it go. Because anger keeps next to hatred, you know, and love. Anger is one of the strongest emotions that binds you to the person. So if you don't release the anger, the inflammation, you're staying tied to that person like a cruise ship rope tied to their neck. That has no nuances in viral days. But anyway, cruise ship rope tied to your neck, you know, oh my God, a virus is going to come through. You know, but release that, cut the cord, let it go, let them fall on their butt on the far side. Like, you know, just release the anger. Not because they necessarily deserve your forgiveness, but because you need to be free of your attachment to that pattern or issue. And so I'll say, be the dragon lady for a day. And clients love that. Yeah, okay, before I leave Miraval, I'm going to be. So they can tell, like, there's so much inflammation in their body. It's like they've held in anger all over different portions of their body. I'm like, you need to release anger in a big way. So I'd say, line up all the people in the desert, do a level two, all the people that are frustrating you. Set their behaviors. I don't have to hurt anybody. Just pile up their behaviors, breathe fire, release it. And then often also to reverse the dragon thing, I'm like, stand under your waterfall in your safe place. Stand under your waterfall, and it's your personal, I mean, we now have personal healing waterfalls, right? So the water that comes through the waterfall is your personal healing color that day that you need to wash out all the anger, the toxins, cancers, whatever's in your body. I always do the waterfall, especially with cancer patients and with diseases, because I'm like, you need to wash that color. The colors that come to you wash over the cells and fields of your body and wash out any inflammation. Particularly, like I said, with the three cancer patients that I had that week, I think I did the waterfall with all of them. One guy, a sweet Irishman, but clearly cancer spread in his body and inflamed and had a temper at one time. I'm like, you need to really stand under your waterfall every day. And I said, what colors do you see to reverse the cancer? And he saw colors. I said, I want you to stand under your waterfall every day and let it wash through your body. And then whatever colors you need, run them through and see how that goes. And so it went very well with those folks.
Brent.
Yes, Ramona?
I have a question about the conference table.
Mm-hmm.
So when you bring the EPs, the parts, to the conference table,
mm-hmm.
It's not possibly to work with all of them at once, right?
No, you have to come to an agreement that who, and thank you all for coming. Can we all reach an agreement as to who we need to work on first? And they agree to give. You'll have a time, and hopefully in this session, but if not this session, next session, but we make an agreement with you that will work. But who do we need to work on first?
And what do you do if 600 show up?
Well, that's a little bit much. I don't know. They may be.
I started to to group them into teams.
There are some.
How many are in the? How many are in the group of the anger? How many are in the group of the sadness?
In any part is a construct of thousands or hundreds of moments in the ego state. So it's not really, you know, it's like, what's the primary or? It's the primary theme or the issue that you're looking at. You could do a level two with a group. Mm-hmm. The group of parts. Let's pile up all our anger today. Let's talk to all the angry parts. Let's talk to the adolescent parts that want to eat. All the frustration you've had with food over the years. Let's pile that up on a cliff. What would you like to do with that? So you want to try to diffuse it. At least you can get down to a fourth part you can work with that day. Maybe you go back to the
and
bottom.
I encountered parts that don't trust the core because the core is drinking.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The core is drinking, so they don't trust that. They say,
we
don't want to work with you.
If you need to do a consultation about parts, Lynn Cardula, she's still the president of ASAP, I think, right now, although we have to cancel the ASAP conference. It's great things are going.
Lynn Cardula does consultations?
Yes, I'm sure she can. I mean, she may charge you something for, like, ask her if you can do a supervision fee that I recommended you. She loves my work. She loves HR. She loves...
I just need a bit more experience with the conference table, and we haven't come across examples.
Yeah, you know, I haven't done it that much over the years. I haven't needed to do that much. That's not the population I'm tending to work with most of the time, but you never know. But you're dealing with more severe dissociation at times, and so... she probably would have more guidance, advice on how maybe better to integrate that or work with that or how she does that piece. She used to come and present for me at level three when we could. Maybe I'll try to bring her back here to Tucson sometime. And she'd talk about her work, and you could ask these questions. I'm just not working with so much severe dissociation. I'm traveling and trying to,
I have a few with, I wouldn't call it severe dissociation, but with very poor attachments, very split EPs. With alcoholic parents, never safe, that type of a thing.
A true DID is going to have severe physical and sexual abuse before the age of five. Otherwise, you can have a borderline that's playing you for attention and creating parts to kind of feed off the attention a little bit. You can have parts that fabricate stories and fabricate images and make up traumas too. So they can get very creative.
Yeah.
Hey, Brent.
Yes.
This is Jeanette.
Hi, Jeanette.
Before we, we're about at 8:30 and before people start dropping off, what I'm going to do is everyone, Karen sent in a prayer for us around the.
Can she read that? Can you share with us, Karen, your prayer?
And I'm going to send it to everybody.
Thank you, Jeanette. Yeah, I figured you probably would. Can you read that prayer for us?
Sure. Just to be clear, it's not my prayer. Nope. Carl Mollison, who gets a lot of information, channels creator, was
Carl is a certified HMR practitioner.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Carl got some of his skills from us. So there you go. That's good. Good for you, Carl.
Good job, Karen. Share the prayer.
Yeah.
Okay, so the prayer is, Source Creator, each and every day, remove or render harmless all dangerous viruses from myself, and apply this prayer again and again as needed to help all infected beings and the earth as a whole to keep everyone safe and restore well-being to the afflicted.
And that should be in your chat boxes now.
Nice.
Cool. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, no, that's great.
It's gorgeous.
And like I said in the email, Brent, it's my motivation for sharing that is that I saw at the beginning of our conversation today, you know, that it's a hot topic and we may have clients coming to us with anxiety as I've already had, you know, asking, you know, what do you suggest we do? Like, you know, like I have all the answers, but again, to just help with people's anxieties. And so I've been sharing it with my clients just to give them some sense of empowerment a little bit, you know, this is, you know, if we pray, that's one thing that we have that we can go to.
The other piece is there is like April Lisa was saying, there's a real viral feature to this. Like I said, I've already been through some of it this last December. But April Lisa is saying, I have a list of actions for C19. So you may want to email that to Jeanette. Jeanette will forward it to everyone if that's okay. What I was going to say is the bigger thing I'm seeing is the prehistory. You know, we have now been marketed to and politicized, marketed through our politics and through media, fear. Since before 2011, we've had 20 years of fear now. And what's happening is this is a trigger. Apparently, it's obviously a trigger for people. With the politics being already compromised and the narcissism and trauma in our face, it's amplifying the fears that were already there. And that's the way trauma works. You know, what's already, you're already afraid of, and now I'm going to be three times stronger because of your prehistory. So with the clients that you're going to work with, more on the phone, sometimes they won't be there in person as much. What you want to do is work with the real source of their fears and say, we need to reframe your fear. The virus is the virus. But anytime we reframe your greatest source of compromise, your fears, your anger, your hatred, your immune system is going to be stronger. And fear is a very strong compromise to the immune system when it comes in. So we do want to work with the source of the fear. Let's work with the source of your fear. Let's stay reasonable. Let's do reasonable precautions. Let's act prudently. And if there is a virus, you know, let's work with what we need to do personally for our own immune systems and do our best. And I don't know what else to say beyond that. So I think it's dealing with your own prehistory of fear and watching it in your clients. And the only client I've had that canceled on me for intensive work thus far is one that's had a lot of panic attacks and fears and things of that sort in the prehistory. And I think it's not the virus per se, but it's the other things that it's triggering. What she doesn't realize is, of course, the very thing we work on would be the fear that would make her more able to cope with these things at the same time. But she would have a long flight to get to me. That's the problem. And they're not, some of them are not recommending right now that you do a long flight or a long cruise or a long journey. So anyway, you're welcome to drive out to Houston anytime you want, to Tucson anytime you want, you know, or go see Jeanette in Houston. Go see Jeanette in Houston. I'm picking on you. I know, you know, kind of coincidental that we canceled our retreat. It turns out that the next training I'm scheduled to do here in Tucson, that everyone is flying in for it. I don't think I have any local, maybe one local is going to do a retake, but unless everybody's planning to fly in. So, when we're looking at how things are going to be impacted, people are still planning to come out and do their work, their healing work. So anyway, any other questions? We're kind of out of time. Thank you, Jeanette. Any other questions before we close?
Yeah. So I always have questions. Brent, I have a client who, she says, well, I don't see anything. When you try to do the metaphor,
she's like, you can't visualize?
Yeah. She's like, just say the first things that come to your mind.
Some of the OCD people think they're not seeing color, but they think we're supposed to be seeing flashes of light in front of our eyes. You have to explain how people see color.
Not to see color. They can't get the metaphor. I ask, where is it? Right in the body.
In the body.
Say the stomach. And I said, well, any size, shape, color? No.
Now, at level 3, we call the somato-emotional dissociation assessment. Some people, what you want to look for is, has she been in her body since childhood? Is there an event that removed her from her body? Does she live? Some people, you get the feeling they live about 2 feet away from their bodies and haven't been in it in a long time. And they observe reality through like a lens or a filter, and then they're not really here. And the way you know that at level 3, how many of you, raise your hand if you've done level 3? How many of you have done level 3?
Yeah.
Nobody here except Ramon. Okay, I think you've done level 3, right? So, okay.
Erica
did, right? So if you haven't done level 3, that's part of the issue, is that when you ask, where do you feel in your body, like, in my body, what do you mean? Isn't everything in your head? I thought all emotions are in your head. What are you talking about? Like, oh God, we have to educate that they have a body. Okay, so we're back to HMR 101, how to start. You have a body, memories occur in your body. So for some people, as a child, it was too painful living in that family, so they just numbed out. Now, the degree to which they turned down their emotional pain perception is the degree to which they lost visualization and color perception. Even before that, however, I'm not talking about color perception, when you say, where in your body do you feel this? I think some people as infants stepped about a foot and a half away from their body. And so when you ask, you're waiting. And you're like, where do you feel in your body? What do you mean in my body? Isn't everything just in your head or something? No. If you get slapped in the face, you're going to feel in your face. If you get punched in the stomach, you feel in your stomach. If you're sad, you feel in your heart. Where do you feel in your body? So some of it is somatic education. You're teaching people to actually link with the sensations in their body. They are not attached to their bodies. Now, sometimes I think there's a drug issue tied to this. Like, I'm getting really concerned about marijuana because they're like, dude, I don't know. I'm not sure where I feel anything in my body. I'm like, well, I know enough from just thinking about the processing over the years. Marijuana is messing with alpha theta. HMR is an alpha theta induction technique. We're trying to create alpha theta. If they're regular pot smokers for 15, 20 years, they stop having nightmares. Mary Gaddy, by the way, is the head of our research committee, and she's semi-retiring now, and she wants to dedicate and get a grant and do some work with HMR. So one of the things I have her checking out for me is, what is the impact of CBD and marijuana on memory access? And hopefully Mary will join us eventually for one of these sessions. But clearly, the teenagers say it stops their nightmares, which means it's disrupting alpha theta. It's stopping their access to the bad dreams. They're getting black sleep. They don't dream, which means it's doing the same thing alcohol does. Alcohol disrupts alpha theta. We know that from the research. Marijuana is disrupting alpha theta. Benzodiazepines are disrupting alpha theta. So these drugs that are creating the most problems for us are the ones that they're using to not connect to their memory-based pain. So obviously there are things that disconnect, but as a child, I think sometimes people were in such contentious, family fighting, quarrelsome environments that they just numbed out. I just say, I say that sometimes, are you just feeling numbed out? Like you don't know what you're feeling in your body? So I'm not sure where that's coming from. You'd have to know a lot more about it.
She is locating the body, but she's not giving me the metaphor, right? I don't see anything.
Now, sometimes there's a volitional issue, they're oppositional. And if you ask her for a question, she's going to say no. Mm-hmm. No, I don't have a feeling.
How no. are you feeling? No, do you no feel we made any progress since we know one another? No.
Borderline, and most likely.
Doesn't come across as borderline, very codependent.
Yeah, it could be. That's not codependent with trying to please you. No, codependent with trying to please you. If they're passive aggressive, codependent on these other features, they'll be oppositional. They're gonna make you work for it. The borderline will make you work for the sex. You work harder than she will.
Yeah, watch me discharge her. So
You know, see what you can do. See what you can do.
So anyway,
send her to get some body work.
Okay.
Send her to a cranial sacral therapist.
As practitioners, what do you suggest? I felt very burned out for the month of January. What do you suggest we do with the burnout feelings like?
Are you getting some cranial sacral work yourself or any kind of body work yourself regularly? Come on now. You got to take care of you. If you're feeling burned down, because you are, you have a tendency of taking these huge, heavy, burdensome clients. And I'm like, okay, hello. You can't keep doing this continuously nonstop.
Yeah, I see about seven.
I took off. I'm like, okay, I got sick in December with the virus thing, with the lungs and the whole thing. I'm like, okay. I always suspected it might have been the precursor of this. Like, I'm empathically taking on the whole country and saying, okay, there's a virus coming. We're going to get sick. Get ready for this. Haven't anything like this. I don't know if I've ever had a virus. So, anyway, I'm not surprised. I know what they're talking about. But my lungs appear to be clear at this point in the latest x-ray. So we're good. For burnout, I extended my usual non-workshop time from January, and I was supposed to be in Maui in February. That got moved because the venue wasn't ready, and I'm like, it's perfect timing for me. My first workshop that I'm going to be doing this year is at the end of March. So I extended my time. I cut back my hours. I didn't allow anybody to fly in. They're starting to fly in next week, and then every week for the next 6 weeks, to and then a brief workshop somewhere else, then it goes on. So people, at least at this point, are still planning to come in and do their personal work. But I took an extra time off for myself and just said, I deserve it. You're not going to be around to do it if you don't take care of yourself, you know. And you can't do trauma work continuously. The better you get at it, they'll send you more complex clients, which means you do have to take rest breaks. I don't like to work. I did 7 clients at Miraval the other day. But 7 in a row, 7 80-minute sessions back-to-back. I don't normally do that, but they requested it, and I was off the day before. So I said, if I know I'm off the day before, go to bed early or do my light machine recharge and restore my system and talk to my guides in advance and say, I have 7 clients. I need to be clear with all 7 all the way through, and I was, because I talked to them about it. If I don't do that, don't talk and don't do a little pre-care and maintenance during it. I don't eat during the process. Food is way too distracting during HMR for me, so I'll eat before and I'll eat after. That's my self-care. Then I'm meditating more, focusing, calmer, quieter, music, relaxation. I haven't been watching news. I know coronavirus could have eaten the planet. I wouldn't know it, you know, at this point. But at this point, I'm just going to, I hear it. You know, self-care, take care of yourself, do what you need to do. You know what your limits are, more or less, I think. So check, pet the kitty, you and kitty go for walks, have some time together, you know, do some nice things for yourself, some nurturing things for yourself. Increase your self-care. Do massages. I don't know if you have massage envy up there, you know, but you got to be careful. You got to get one that does cranial sacral in combination with massage or something. What else? Anything else that I know of that's been especially helpful of late? I went back to using the light machine and it did make a difference. I had more energy the next day when I did that.
Where did you purchase the light machine, Brent?
I have 2 of them. Maybe at least 2 of them. 2 of them. One got flooded, so I had 3. But they're through Light Health Research. I did that probably 12 years ago, 14 years ago. Maybe less, a little bit less, but I've been using it. I didn't use it for a while, and then I was feeling kind of tired, drained, and I'm like, I'm going to start increasing. When I did increase, I was better. I had more energy the next day at Miraval. So,
are you talking about the SAD lamp?
No, it's called, they call it the Dream Spa. Look up Light Health Research. The contact person up to now has been
the Dream Spa?
Dream Spa under lighthealthresearch.com.
Okay.
The theory is that it's a combination of particular frequencies. What's our usual? Our usual frequency is AC. Is that right where our light bulbs are? This is DC. AC is a non-biocompatible current. Most of the lighting in our houses, our bedrooms, our computers is non-biocompatible.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Tesla made one really bad decision, and that's to make everything AC. So when it switches, it flips it to DC, runs it as a series of light frequencies to your body in half an hour. If you charge any part of a toroidal field, the whole field charges. And by the time we hit our 30s and 40s, we're depleting. So we do need a little extra boost. So that seemed to be helpful. I don't want to market this thing to you. But if you can find somebody around the city or something that has one, you could just use it. I gave it to people for free on the retreats.
Yeah, there are some people that have crystal beds and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, some of that, but, you know, that's a different thing from the LED, the charging the photonic field of the body. That's a different thing. Mm. But there's a lot of stuff to do. I meditate with crystals every night. Yes, what my self-care practices are, they get kind of exotic. But I bought more rocks at the gem show this year, some really weird stuff from Brazil that appealed to me. So it seems to be working. I always try to raise my vibration a little higher, a little higher, a little higher. Of course, the higher I go, the more they send you clients. So be working with you, you know, kind of thing. Challenges like the three cancer patients that showed up in 1 week. It's like, okay, that's a new one.
Brent?
Yes?
You mentioned a few months ago about, just when you're talking about raising your energy field, that you would one would need to eat more protein.
Yeah. Are you blood type, Karen?
Oh.
You need more protein. So there's that book, Eating Right for Your Type.
Yeah.
A lot of us as energy, and that's true of energy workers in general, we require extra protein. That's something to do with
what's the reason? Okay, yeah, sorry, cut you off.
Light energy exchange is particularly draining on protein levels. Not sure exactly why, but we do require higher, you'll crave protein after doing energy work a lot of the time. I found that to be very accurate. It's very true. And so no, it's some kind of protein supplement.
It's interesting because I've been vegetarian for over 20 years, but like last January, so just over a year now, I've been eating meat again.
Interesting. So there are ways to get the protein in your diet. I'm not the best nutrition expert when it comes to that, but I'm a meat eater too, so. You know, I do more protein in the diet. Cheeses, you know, other kinds of things that can bring you in protein are really good. But I'm not, O's are not gluten friendly. I'm reaching hostility with gluten. So gluten and I don't get along real well lately. O's and yeah, it's not our friend anymore. So as we age, apparently we get more gluten sensitive. The lactose, we tend to not do great with dairy. O's do really poorly with gluten. We are not raised in grain regions. We can do limited dairy, I think, and there are certain beans that will try to kill you. But apart from that, other kinds of beans, proteins, O's, we do really well. We require daily exercise or we get lethargic. If you don't walk or do something, you're going to get a little lethargic and notice that. So we require a little movement, extra exercise, extra protein. I found that Eating Right for Your Type book, the Diadamo Diet, D-apostrophe-A-D-A-M-O, that the Eating Right for Your Type book, meaning for your blood type, was accurate for O's. It was very accurate for O's. And I made
it's O's funny too. Because about 20 years ago or so, a friend of mine told me about that book. And I said to him, if it says that I can't eat avocados, I'm not doing it. And sure enough, it said limit your avocado intake. I'm like,
yeah, I love avocados, but now they say avocados would be great for me. I believe that's cholesterol, I think, for lowering your cholesterol.
I've always loved avocados. I think it's one of those things.
Yeah, you have to ignore it. And they say Brussels sprouts are bad for us. I love Brussels sprouts. So I think you have to take that in with a grain of salt and say adapted to
what. Exactly. But you found it to be pretty accurate.
Oh, yeah.
For,
yeah,
for okay, those. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, it turned out to be really true about the gluten thing, and doctors could figure out why he has pain stuff. And I do gluten. Oh, my God, I'm dying. No gluten. Like, oh, great. Well, that's pretty obvious to go on and figure it out. So you got to see what works with, you know, maybe there'll be an energy worker's diet eventually, you know, but I haven't figured that out. I think it's based on diet score. Okay, folks.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
All right, well, hang in there, stay tuned. Thanks, you. Jeanette. Thanks, everybody. Okay.
Thanks, Brent. Thanks, folks.
Text or call.
Bye, thank you.
Okay.
Brent, what's